From iCare Partners, this is the Doc to Doc podcast. Clinical discussions with our team of world-class eye care professionals across the country. Through connectedness and continuing education, we help patients see their absolute best for life. Your host is Dr. Lori Preventure, a glaucoma specialist and cataract surgeon at the Cincinnati Eye Institute.
Today, I'm honored and excited to have Dr. Carl Golnick with me. He's a neuro-ophthalmologist and professor and chair of the UC Department of Ophthalmology. Dr. Golnick is here to give us an update on two important forms of atypical optic neuritis. This is an important topic that relates to all eye care providers across the CBP platform, especially those of us that take general call or see urgent eye patients. So Dr. Golnick, when we hear of optic neuritis, we typically think of MS-associated optic neuritis. Can you, just off the bat, remind us of what atypical features might be?
Sure, and thanks for having me on this show. The typical optic neuritis has got its name because most of the publications on optic neuritis are from North America and Europe, and so it's usually or often associated with multiple sclerosis, and people usually have good recovery of vision with no treatment. Typical optic neuritis, there's either optic disc swelling in about a third of patients, or no optic disc swelling in two-thirds, but when there is swelling, it's very mild. So atypical optic neuritis, one of the key features, if you are thinking, oh, another case of typical optic neuritis, and you look in the back of the eye and you see more than mild disc swelling, moderate or severe, or any hemorrhage or exudate, that takes it out of the realm of typical optic neuritis, and we need to think about other entities in that case. Another feature of atypical optic neuritis that's very important is that although we often treat typical optic neuritis with steroids, it's not really steroid responsive or steroid dependent. So if you treat somebody with, you think has typical optic neuritis with steroids and they get better, but then you stop the steroids and they get worse, that is a sign that this is a steroid dependent optic neuritis. In other words, an atypical optic neuritis.
So once we identify atypical cases, how should we approach these patients from a diagnostic standpoint?
So if you're thinking it's atypical optic neuritis, then there are some newer blood tests that we do for that condition. We still get the MRI looking for certain features, but there are two new blood tests, one not quite as new as the others, the neuromyelitis optica antibody test, also really known as the aquaporin 4 antibody. That's commercially available. It's been around for a while, but it's seen in most patients who have neuromyelitis optica, which we used to call Devic's disease, now known as NMO or neuromyelitis optica. So that's one of the blood tests. The other blood test is for a much newer entity known as myelin oligodendrocyte glycoprotein antibody, or MOG, MOG. So the MOG blood test has only been commercially available for a couple of years. I typically send these to Mayo as a send out because some of the assays are a bit different and that they have the best assays. So if you're thinking atypical optic neuritis because of any of the features we just talked about, then we have to think about NMO and MOG forms of atypical optic neuritis. Now, of course, we also have other things on the list besides those two. Those are the new ones. We have sarcoid, which would be somewhere in that list. And then there's some really unusual things. And of course, there's something known as cryon, chronic relapsing immune optic neuritis, which is sort of an idiopathic form of atypical optic neuritis that is often responsive and dependent on steroid use, but it doesn't, all the testing is negative. And so we call it cryon, C-R-I-O-N.
So clinically, what are the main differences you see between NMO and MOG associated optic neuritis?
Right. So clinically, initially, there may be really no differences. It's very difficult to look, and there may be no differences, I should say, that although it's fairly easy to differentiate atypical optic neuritis on the basis of the factors I've mentioned, the response or dependence on steroids, the appearance of the nerve, you can see retrobulbar optic neuritis with either MOG or NMO. So the fact that it looks like typical optic neuritis clinically in the fundoscopic picture doesn't mean that it is typical. It still could be these other things. And so to differentiate NMO from MOG, of course, the blood test, but clinically, the NMO tends to be a bad actor. So it is much less likely to recover. One episode and you could be blind or legally blind forever, the rate of recovery is much worse. And MOG, is the recovery is more like optic neuritis. So although the mean nadir in acuity is count fingers in MOG, the mean recovery is 20/25. So there's usually good recovery. The other things that that can help differentiate NMO from MOG is on the MRI, typically we think of enhancement of the optic nerve as a feature of optic nerve inflammation, optic neuritis. But we now know that NMO and MOG tend to have longer segments of enhancement. So if you see that in MRI, you should be thinking atypical versus MS. But there's also a difference between NMO and MOG in that MOG optic neuritis on MRI, more than half the time, there will be perineural enhancement. And so you will see enhancement, not of the nerves necessarily, but of the nerve sheath. We used to call this, and still, I guess, call this optic perineuritis. And most of the time, it was idiopathic. It was probably MOG, MOG, myelin oligodendrocyte glycoprotein optic neuritis. So if you find, in particular, if you find perineural enhancement of the nerve, that is very suggestive of MOG optic neuritis. And then I would just say one other thing about clinically about there have been several studies from Mayo Clinic that have looked at recurrent optic neuritis. So one of the big questions right now is, well, do you get NMO and MOG on everybody who has optic neuritis? Because I just said, well, you might have something that looks like typical optic neuritis, and then down the road you realize, oh, it's got better, but it's getting worse with when we get them off the steroids. Why not just check NMO and MOG on everybody? And that's under some debate. For sure, we get the NMO and the MOG if it's atypical, the disc features, steroid dependent, and all that. The other time I always get MOG and MO is if it's a recurrent. So if the person says, oh, you know, 5 years ago I had an episode like this, and they said it was optic neuritis or inflammation of the nerve, and it got better. In the Mayo studies, it looked at almost 100 patients with more than 100 patients with recurrent optic neuritis. About a third of everybody had either NMO or MOG. So in the setting of recurrent, defined as more than one episode, just two or more episodes, you're fairly likely about a third of the time to find one of these.
Are you waiting till lab results come back before you talk about prognosis with patients, or do you try and give them an idea based on some of the other things you've mentioned?
So I think that it's a good question, and the other question other than prognosis is treatment. Fortunately, the treatment of all three, of typical optic neuritis and atypical, is pretty much the same from the start, intravenous steroids, and we can talk more about that. The prognosis, I certainly don't talk about prognosis until I have the blood test back and so on, just because there's such a big difference in prognosis between NMO and MOG. So I don't talk about it. We talk about inflammation of the nerve. We talk about some of these entities briefly, but I say, well, let's get the blood test and figure it out. And, you know, for most people, at CVP or general ophthalmologist, you know, they're going to end up with me or a neuro-ophthalmologist anyway to have those discussions.
Right. So you mentioned treatment options. First line is IV steroids. What are some of the other options available?
Right. So the big difference is, as I mentioned, the intravenous steroids are often used for any form of optic neuritis, and it's usually a 1,000 milligrams of methylprednisolone 3 to 5 days, you know, once a day for 3 to 5 days. It can be given orally, we found. So the equivalent would be 1,250 milligrams of prednisone. And I have written prescriptions for 25, 50 milligram pills of prednisone a day for 3 days. That prescription is occasionally refused to be filled by the pharmacist. Even when I call them, I've had people refuse to fill it. Now that's changed because neurologists are using that dosage more orally. So I do offer people high dose equivalent of oral prednisone, 25, 50s a day for 3 days. But there is a big difference in the treatment. So if the patient has NMO and they don't have recovery literally during those few days of IV steroids, plasmapheresis is recommended. Or intravenous immunoglobulin. In the MOG setting, again, since the prognosis is so much better, it's a little bit different. We wait a little bit longer, we wait for recovery, and most of those people, as I mentioned, mean recovery of 20/25. But if they are not getting better, then we also talk about plasmapheresis or intravenous immunoglobulin. So the treatment then varies quite a bit from the typical, oh, just give them the steroids for a few days and then wait because they're going to probably get better over the next, you know, few weeks to few months. So there's a much difference, much bigger difference for these two entities. So it's important to recognize them.
Wow, so it sounds like these patients are undergoing aggressive immunotherapy to rescue or recover vision. Are there any other treatments in the pipeline that maybe we haven't heard about yet?
Well, there are. So until this year, 2020, there were no sort of FDA-approved medicines for these conditions. And once they have the acute episode, in NMO, for instance, the recommendation is long-term immunosuppression. There are two now FDA-approved medications. One is eculizumab, which is a terminal complement inhibitor, and the other was just really recently approved. It's called inebilizumab, and there's one other one that's in the pipeline where there are clinical trials being done right now. So these are medicines not for the acute episode of optic neuritis or other, we haven't talked about other neurologic manifestations which they can have. These are for the acute episode, or after the acute episode, to prevent episodes, just like the multiple sclerosis mm-hmm. medicines out there are not for the acute episode so much. They're to prevent recurrent episodes. So these, the MABs, I call them, are being used to prevent recurrence. In NMO, one episode is enough to get on one of these forever. In MOG, because of the much better prognosis, if the person has good recovery and they've had one episode, then you probably will follow them without one of these medications. But if they have more than one episode and they've proven that this is going to be a recurrent problem, then they are on one of these other medications as recommended. And they've used things like azathioprine and so on, the usual immunosuppressives. But there's certainly a lot of these newer medications out that are being tested clinically now.
Hopefully more targeted.
Yes, yeah, more targeted. Right. More targeted. And again, some FDA approved for NMO. I don't think there's nothing that's been FDA approved yet for MOG, just because it's so new, a condition that's been identified.
Great. That's wonderful. All right. So you've done a great job at pronouncing a lot of really big words. And I'm so glad you came on today. This is really interesting and really important for us to learn about so we can differentiate these patients, because it really does make a difference in their treatment and their prognosis. So thank you for taking the time.
Thanks.
It was great having you.
Good to be here.
The opinions expressed by the physicians in this podcast are solely the personal opinions of the providers and do not represent EyeCare Partners policy.